This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we're going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward, so grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. Welcome back to another episode of What's Up Wednesday. What's going on in y'all's world? Well, I'll tell you what's going on in mine. Last week took a short trip up to Niagara Falls. And man, if you guys haven't been there, I highly recommend it. Just don't go when it's 97 degrees, because it was hot. But spent, three days up in Canada. We actually went on the Canadian side instead of the U.S. side. And I'm kind of glad we did, because the views are completely different. The view from the U.S. side does not look, and I haven't been over there, but it does not look like you get the full picture of the falls, because one of the set of falls you're literally standing on top of, looking up and across to the main falls, which is kind of like in a big dog leg. It's got a crook in it, comes back. But it's been a couple days up there. We went to the falls during the daytime, checked it out, and you know, the mist was a blessing when it was 96 degrees. And then we went back on Tuesday night to look at the lights. They have a light that they shine on the falls, and we actually got to see some fireworks. So it was a good trip. Got to hang out with Nick, you know, our buddy from Canada. That's who we go up and hunt with. Nick Sproul come down and eat dinner with us. He was actually working in the area, so got to hang out with him for 3 or 4 hours and, you know, talk dogs and fishing trips and everything in between. And on our way home, we got to stop by and see Luke for a little bit. Well, that was a purpose trip. We met up with Luke, and I actually picked up a young dog that he had for me. So we got to chit-chat for about 30 minutes. Him and Crystal were going on their anniversary trip. And as I record this today, it's Luke's birthday. So happy birthday, buddy. Hope it's been a good one. You're on the state side, so I know it is. But yeah, so that's what went on last week. Fished. So Thursday night, of course, you know I fished the river tournaments. Put the boat in. I don't know. There was 10 or 12 boats. It was calling for a thunderstorm, but it was supposed to be short-lived. So everybody got their boats in. It started sprinkling. And then it started raining, so everybody just put their raincoats and their ponchos on. About 15, 20 minutes into that, it started lightning. So everybody's like, not doing this. So everybody just kind of left their boat sitting. And at the boat ramp where we were at, there's a shelter about 100 yards across the road. So everybody just kind of went over to the shelter and was hanging out. And I'm going to tell you, it rained sideways. It rained sheets. It rained and rained and rained. And somebody was sitting down at the boat ramp and called over and said, hey, there's some boats floating down the river. And we're like, well, how's that happening? So anyway, they tell me mine's floating down the river, and it was two others. So I get down there, and mine's 50 yards out in the middle of the river. And I'm like, holy, and it's pouring down rain. It's thundering. It's lightning. It is not a safe environment. So I jump on the boat with Ryan. Ryan takes me down. His boat's about to go under because there was so much water in it because it had rained so much. And I jump over in mine, get it started, turned around, and I go back up river. Well, mine's taking on a lot of water, and that's what happened. Where I pull it up on the bank, the water had run to the back and lifted the front of the boat up, which caused it to float away from the bank. And I think there was two others that did it. But anyway, I finally got back up. I turned my bilge on. I mean, I'm pumping water out of it. I make the decision, I'm going to load it up. And I mean, it's pouring. When I say pouring down rain, it was pouring down rain, still lightning. I get the truck back down, trailer in the water, load the boat up. And I mean, when I hit my trailer, like, you could tell my boat was heavy. So I get it up out of the water, pull the plugs. And I'm telling you that thing drained for 30 minutes getting the water out of it. So crashed our party on Thursday. And about lost my boat in the same thing. So Friday morning, we decide we're going to get up and we're going to go fishing. So me and my partner went down river. Now, I got to back up. So on the way home, it had rained 5 inches in like an hour. The roads were flooded. There was trees coming across the roads. We ended up having to take a back way to get, get around so I could get to the house. And it was still water running across the roads. It was flooding. Like, it was nasty. So we decided to go fishing the next morning, knowing that the water was going to be dirty. So we go to one of the areas we were going to fish, and sure enough, it is chocolate milk. And I'm like, you know what? I need to learn to fish this. So we fished for about 3 hours. Nothing. Nada. So I'm like, let's go back up above where we were at last night and see if the water's any different, because above where we were at didn't get hit as hard. So we go back and we're crossing a bridge. Below the bridge is muddy. Above the bridge is tinted. Like, it's stained, but it's not bad at all. It's very fishable. So we ended up putting in upriver a good bit, fished for another couple, 3-4 hours, caught several fish, caught a haul, man. That fish was fat. He was big. I mean, it was a good fish. I caught several, but nothing like that. So then fished yesterday out in the blazing sun. It was hot. But yeah, so that's kind of what's been going on in my world. I got my Nooksook banner in. I posted a picture of it. Man, they done a fantastic job with it. It's got 4 or 5 of the dogs on it, my dogs. But yeah, so I posted a picture of it, and then the question starts coming in. You know, I got people asking about how much I feed, you know, how big the bags are, you know, the same stuff. So I'm going to kind of go over it again. It's all dog dependent. And what we have found, like I said, I'm over 4 years feeding this, and I've got it down to a science for my dogs. I've got some dogs that if you feed them 2 cups through the summer, they're huge. In fact, I've cut one of my dogs back, Attica. I mean, she looks like a beach whale, and she's a bigger dog. I mean, she's 65 pounds, good long legs on her. And I'm telling you, she is huge, and I'm feeding her just about a little over a cup, trying to cut some of that weight off of her. But I get the question, like, how much are you feeding? It's dog dependent. Right now, it's summertime. It's hot. Like I said, we just come out of the 90s. We're back in the mid-80s this week. I mean, I'm not feeding any of my dogs 2 cups, none of them. But that's summertime. So we go into running season, and of course I'm going to up that. And I like to preload them, right? We talked about the preload. Like, before hunting season, about a week before, I'm going to start feeding them a little extra. I want just a little extra weight on them. That way, when I start, not during August, okay? We don't want that weight on them when it's hot as it normally is in August. But December, you know, November, man, I preload them, get them up, get a little weight on them. That way, that first couple of days, that first week doesn't shock their system, and then they look like they're anorexic, because that's not what we want. But I always switch over. I've said it before. About October, when I go down to the coast to hunt with BB and them, I start feeding the 32-32. And again, I'm just feeding 2 cups of it, but the calorie, you know, you're going from 780 calories per cup from 578. So I'm gaining almost 200 calories just by switching to the 32-32. And during December, if it's like last year, it was super cold. Everybody remembers that, super cold the first week. I was feeding several dogs 3 cups. You know, Spook and Axe, maybe Houdini. I was feeding several dogs 3 cups. And if you have a dog that's very active in the pen, you're going to end up feeding them more, because they're constantly burning those calories. If you've got a dog that's chill and laid back, then you're not feeding them as much. So it's dog dependent. But right now, I'm not feeding anything that I have over 2 cups, like nothing over 2 cups. And as season comes on, if I start running them hard, that'll change. That'll fluctuate a little bit. And into December, I switch my blend to 32-32, and I'm still around 2 cups. And that is a bigger bag. So the 32-32 comes in a 44-pound bag. The 30-25 comes in the 33-pound bag. The 33-pound bag, if you're feeding it accordingly, is going to last you as long as a 50-pound bag because of the calories. If you look at the calories per cup, 578, If you're looking at that and whatever dog food you're feeding, look at the calories per cup for that. It's going to adjust. So got several questions. I got another question on cleanup. Somebody, I think Travis had sent me a message asking about the cleanup, and, you know, it's not much, guys. And I think out of everybody that switches over and starts feeding the Inukshuk, that's one of the first comments they make. That's the first feedback that we get is, I can't believe how little of cleanup there is. I clean my pens every day. And, I mean, it's usually one pile per dog, and it's done. So it's not much. And they're solid. They're not mashed potatoes. It ain't gravy. It's a solid stool. So if you're feeding and you're getting runny, you're probably feeding too much, especially with the 32-32. You can get diarrhea if you're overfeeding. And then that's one of the ways to tell how to adjust. But, yeah, so got several questions on that. It did go up $1 a bag, which with everything that's going on, that's not horrible. And, you know, some people are complaining, and I get it. I mean, we don't want to pay no more than we have to for food, but for the quality of food that it is, the quality, that you cannot buy another brand of dog food for that price. You just can't do it. And, guys, I've been feeding dogs for over 30 years now, and I have fed a lot of different feeds. This is the best feed that I have found for me, for the price point. Okay, let's add that in there. I fed Purina for years, but Purina got where I couldn't afford it, and it was too much inconsistency. You know, Inukshuk is a family-owned and operated. It is a small dog food company, and they take pride in the quality of their product. They take a lot of pride in it, and they're not changing things. They're not dropping their quality of protein to cut cost. They're not switching the bag sizes to cut cost. I mean, that's one thing. Purina used to be up by a 50-pound bag, and now it's like a 47.5, but the price went up. We can go on and on and on. But anyway, I get a lot of those questions about Inukshuk. I still like it, and I'm going to feed it as long as I can afford to feed it. And I'm really happy with the results. Like I said, I've got it down to a science, feeding it over 4 years now. And if you got questions, feel free to message me, reach out. I'll try to answer them the best I can. And if I can't, I'll get the answers from the company itself. They've been very good about answering anything that I've ever asked. So, yeah, that's it. All right, on to this week's episode. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'll just pose this to you. I had a question last week. I was in a conversation with somebody, and, you know, we were talking about dogs and packs of dogs and, you know, dogs that do this. And we were talking about the European breeding program and how that if the dog does not perform at a certain level, they are not considered into the breeding program. And we've talked about bringing on here. We've had several people on. I mean, we've had Bart Rogers on from Auburn University talking about the breeding program. You know, we've had others on that talk about breeding and genetics. And, you know, it comes down to a gamble. I don't care what you do. But if you take two dogs that are able to function and perform solo, your chances of having those dogs should be better, correct? Well, that's what we all think. But anyway, somebody was talking about, was asking me a question about it. And I'll just flat out tell you, I have 12 dogs, not counting the puppies, okay? 12 dogs that I can take and hunt right now. 12. I've got way too many. So out of those 12 dogs, I have 4 that will run and catch game by themselves, have done it and done it multiple times. Okay, 12 and 4. So that's 8 dogs that are kind of in the middle. I can take any 2 of those dogs of the 12, any 2 of them, and go catch game with those 2 dogs. All right, well, explain that to me. How does that happen? Well, together, they work better. right? Whatever one of them's shortcoming is, the other one's making up for it and vice versa. But I've got four that I could solo take out by themselves and not have to worry. They would catch bear consistently by themselves. All right. So that's what kind of brought this podcast on. And it's going to be a series because I've got several that I want to talk about. But, you know, throughout history, you know, our hunting dogs are more than just companions. You know, they're our partners. We spend a lot of time with them. You know, we ask them to do a lot of different things in different terrain, climates. Like, you know, August here is hot. December last year was, I mean, single digits. You know, we look at how weather changes in August and September. You'll wake up and it'll be, you know, 55 degrees. And by the end of the day, you're over 80, you know, 30 degree temperature change. So we look at different climates. And, you know, while some individual dogs have earned fame and recognition, there's others that have worked just as hard and remained in the shadows. So that's what this podcast is about. These dogs are unsung heroes. You know, they're hunting dogs who have names that were known by only their handlers or their hunters. You know, they displayed loyalty, intelligence, unmatched instincts. And this is going to be a tribute to some of those dogs in my pack that have went and kind of been in the shadows. All right. So we're going to start off with a dog that I had that was named Smokey. And I tried to remember what year I ended up with him. And I don't really, I think it was going to be 2000. But let's just go back in history just a little bit. Okay. Let's start with Ben Lilly. Ben Lilly had a pack of dogs. And if you follow him, if you've read any of his books, I've actually been, when I was in New Mexico lion hunting, I actually went to his old home place. I went to a couple of the, one of the outlooks that was dedicated to him. You know, everybody knows, if you're in the hound world, you know who Ben Lilly is. Like I said, I know I've got three or four books that I've read. But I'm just going to tell you about some of the dogs that I remember reading and hearing about. And I've actually got a picture of Ben Lilly downstairs in my man cave. And he's sitting on a rock bluff, and he's got five or six dogs with him and an old stick. And on the stick, he's got like a sack rolled up where he's got his stuff in it. But Ben had two dogs that he talked about. Crook, which was a bear and lion dog that he used. And he talked about Crook being responsible for over 200 bear and over 400 and some lions. And that was in the early 1900s up to about 1925. And Ben thought so much of Crook that when he buried him, you know, he put up a memorial for him to remember him. But Ben's favorite dog was a dog named Tippy, right? So you hear about these dogs. But what about Lady and Red, Trailer? What about Jim? It was an Airedale Beagle Cross that Ben used to run around. You don't hear about those dogs. You hear about the Tippies and the Crooks. You know, the Red was almost like a bloodhound type dog that he used for trailing. If you go to Meet Mr. Grizzly with Montague, right? One of my favorite books. You know, Montague didn't talk about the dog's names per se, but he always had four with him. He used them in a pair. And when you're reading the book, he talks about more about their abilities than he does their name. He had two that he used to catch the game that he was after. And then the other two was his slower trailing dogs that he could keep up with on horseback. And they could keep in line with the other hounds that went on to catch. But if you remember at the end of the book, he named a dog named Rufus, right? And I actually named one of my old English dogs years ago after him, and I called him Rufus. But you always hear about the good ones. You've heard me talk about Frosty and Brandy and Belle and Ring. You know, that's kind of four of my dogs that have kind of been named over and over and noted that, you know, they were really good hounds, right? But at one point in time, and I'll just name the dogs, after Frosty passed away, I was running Ring and Bell. So we're going to leave them out. But I also had Smokey and Sam and a dog named Cannon and Clyde. Clyde was my other Cameron Blue dog. But Clyde ended up passing away at a very early age. He was six. He kept getting hurt and hurt and hurt. So we're going to talk about over the next couple episodes, we're going to talk about Smokey and Sam and Cannon. And I'm going to kind of bring them out of the shadows because all three of those dogs would catch bear by themselves. Ring catch bear by himself. Bell catch bear by herself. Clyde caught numerous bear by himself. You know, I had a pack at one point in time of what I'm trying to rebuild. Now, I've got four dogs right now. At that point in time, I had five. That was all the dogs that I hunted. That's what I actually took. So let's talk about Smokey a little bit. I got Smokey from Glennie Price. Glennie gave him to me as a puppy. And I can't tell you his exact lineage. He did go back to the Frosty bloodline, and he went back to Glennie's Beaver Lake Magic stuff. He had a dog named Big Dan and Little Dan. And keep those names in mind because when we talk about Sam, it's going to be the same bloodline. Smokey was probably the best built hound I've ever owned. A long-legged. If you could put him up, I said it numerous times, that dog could have placed at the World Show. Had feet like a cat on him. Good pads, good bone structure, had a good reach, good drive in the rear end. Powerful dog. And saddleback or blanket back dog, good hanging ear on him. Just a well. I'd like to have four or five of those built dogs right now because he was what, and for me, that's the type of dog that I want. When I look at a dog structurally, Smokey is one of those dogs that always stays in the back of my mind. The Smokey, man, he was a project. So I got him at a puppy, and I hunted nonstop back then. Like I'm telling you, I wore some boots out. And at the beginning of bear season, Smokey had already turned, he was a year and a half old, actually. About halfway through. Now, listen, I was going to New York back then. I was traveling a lot. And that dog had a lot of exposure. So the first December, the dog was a year old. Or right at a year old. And me and Paul Hell were hunting one day. And I don't remember what he did, but I got so aggravated with him. And I told Paul, I said, just take the collars off of him. And Paul's like, no, we're not doing that. So I said, well, he's yours. If he's coming out and going to the truck, you're going to bring him. So Paul put a lead on him and he brought him out. And very aggravated with the dog at the time. And he wasn't doing nothing. I don't recall whether he was actually making races or not. I thought about it this morning. I'm like, I don't know, but I know that he stayed on my nerves, So the next training season, I think I'd taken him to New York. And, you know, back then we didn't have August. You only had September to hunt. And about halfway through September, I told Glennie, I was like, Glennie, I'm going to give you this dog back. He's like, well, just go ahead and bring him back. And the last day of training season, and I remember this well, this was the start of a phenomenal dog. So he's a little over a year and a half. I want to say he was about 18 months old, actually. Last day of training season, we treat a bear and treat it pretty close to the road. I'm talking 200 or 300 yards from the road. So we got in there to him, and Smokey is sitting back treeing. He's barking, and I'm like, oh, well, okay. Well, as we go to catch up dogs, I mean, the bear does a freaking Peter Pan, man. He jumps flat off that tree, down through the creek he goes. And, of course, the dogs, it's on a race again. Now, this is like, this is early 2002. This is 2002, let's say. And they treat it again. We got into the tree, same thing. Bear's sitting just right up over your head. Bear bells, runs another 200-300 yards down the holler, trees again. Well, this time when we get in there, Smokey's literally up on the tree, like sitting there, like treeing his hind end off. He was one of the most beautiful tree dogs that I've owned. And when I say that, I could care less that he's up on the tree. But he just sat with a steady, loud chop. And that chop carried. It was almost sharp. But that day, I decided I'm going to hang on to this dog for a little bit longer. And I did. And I am so lucky that I did not send him packing before then. Because Smokey ended up making one of the better dogs that I've owned. And I'll tell you some things that was good about him. And I'll tell you some things that were bad about him. Smokey would pack. If he could hear the dogs, he would go to them. And I didn't care how far it was. One time I was hunting in an area. And we had struck a bear in the Autumn Olives. Or poke, it was actually pokeberries, sorry. Struck a bear in the pokeberries. And the dogs made a little, they went backwards for about 50 yards and they turned and they crossed the road and got it lined out. Well, I held him and Cannon a little bit longer than I probably should have. And I turned them loose. And as I turned them loose, the dogs topped over, went out of hearing. And that dog never said a word. And when I got around to the other side of the mountain, he was sitting in there, tree just as pretty as you could please. And walked in there, and they had a really nice bear. I'm talking 300 plus. It's training season. I remember in Canada, me and Rodney were in Canada hunting one year, and Smokey had a horrible habit. Now guys, I hadn't been hunting, you know, 2000, I'd been in it 6 years. You know, you take your first year pretty much, you know, you don't know anything. And at that point in time, I still didn't know anything. You know, I'm still learning every day. We were in Canada, and that was when Ring was into his slip train phase where he'd do things and aggravate you to death. And so anyway, you could holler for Smokey and he would come to you. But he would stop about 100 yards, 150 yards short of where you were at. And he would lay down. I don't know why he did this. I don't know what caused it. I mean, I'm sure I did through my training, whatever I was doing with him. So I ended up leaving him in the woods that night. I mean, I stayed out till dark. Don't think I just hunted till 9 and that was it. Went back, and you got to remember, this is when you had the old beep beep collars, right? And we stayed out. We come back, unloaded dogs, went back. We went back 2 or 3 times, but I was out till dark trying to catch him. Couldn't catch him. And back then, like, you know, if you guys from the mountain and ever hunted flat ground, in the mountains, you get a signal. They could be on top of the mountain, and it sounded like, you know, that beep was like it was right beside you. Well, in the flat ground, they could be a mile or two away and sound like it was right beside you. So I had went in and out several times, but I ended up leaving him. And we come back the next morning. We turn loose in a section, and I did not even give it a thought with him. We turned loose in a section. The dogs ended up running, crossing the road, running into another section, and finally ended up treed. Had a good, I don't know, 250, 275, good bear treed. We got in there, Smokey's sitting in there treeing away with other dogs. Don't know where he come from. Don't know where he'd been. They picked him all up somewhere along the ways, and he was with them. But he would do that. And I got to the point where I figured out that once I got him coming my direction, I just shut up. I quit hollering for him. And then he would come on out to where you were at. But that was a very, very aggravating thing that he did. Smokey never was really trashy. I'm sure that I had to break him off stuff, but I don't remember like having to put a lot of time into it like I did Bell and Clyde. They were trashy. In fact, people told me I couldn't break them. But Smokey wasn't that way. But through the years, Smokey became a very solid, him and Ring, and I think I've talked about this on other podcasts, him and Ring literally had treated so many bear with just them two dogs. And Ring could do it by himself, but again, Smokey could too. And there are several times that like Smokey would pop out with a bear by himself during his years, and I'd end up packing him, or he'd end up catching it by himself and treeing it. Didn't get hurt too much. A couple times he'd get a hole or something in him. And Uncle Bob will enjoy this story about Smokey. We were in Maine hunting, and it was not a good hunt. But me and Bob and Chris was up in Maine hunting, and I don't know. We had some type of race, and to this day, I'm pretty convinced it was a moose. But anyway, got the dogs back, and we got back to the lodge where we were staying and was out feeding the dogs. Well, Smokey literally had a huge hole on the inside of his thigh on his back leg. It was like he'd got jabbed with something, like he'd run a stob or something up in it. And it was about the size of a 50-cent piece. So I decided that I'm going to fix it. So we go down to the local store, and I buy a fishing hook, I buy some fishing line, and I buy some alum powder. We lay Smokey on the bed of that truck. I cut the barb. I smashed the barb on the fishing hook and ended up sewing that hole up, poured alum powder all in it, sewing that hole up. And Smokey never flinched, didn't think about it, put him on some antibiotics. And that hole, you would never known it was there after it healed up. And Bob said, "I cannot believe that dog sat there and let you do that and didn't even think about it." But it happened. I sure enough did that. And I'm pretty proud of that one. That one, you couldn't even tell there was a scar left on that one. But that alum powder will draw that up. You know, it draws it up and it helped things. Like I said, and I had penicillin, so we carry our medicine with us, right? So anyway. But yeah, Smokey was he was so reliable. He was always there, and we never talk about him. But without him and the others that I'm going to talk about, a lot of my really, really good hunts would not have been what they were. So this is to the dogs that stay in the shadows. I'm going to tell you a little bit about mine. I hope you enjoyed this episode of What's Up Wednesday.
Crack of dawn, trucks gassed and loaded, collars charged and the GPS coded. Hounds in the box, tail starting to thump. They know that ridge, they feel that jump. Bear sign fresh on the mountain trail. You can smell the storm in the cool thin gale. Let them loose and watch them fly. That deep bay rings neath the open sky. I'm a bear hound man, born and bred. Chasing thunder where the brave don't tread. Through rock ravine and pine so tall. I trust them hounds when the big ones fall. Can't deny it ain't for fun. dirt where the claw marks stay. Old boar's moving and he won't play. Young dog's learning, old dog leads. Running with purpose, not just speed. Treetops shaking and the chase gets tight. You thank the Lord when they tree it right. One long howl from your cold-nosed crew. You know they earned it every boot step too. I'm a bear hound man, born and bred. Chasing thunder where the brave don't tread. Through rock, ravine, and pine so tall. I trust them hounds when the big ones fall. And legends where few have led. Through brush and snow, through heat and rain, that old bear trail runs in my veins. So here's to the pack who run the sound, standing firm when the bear home. Yeah, we're home where the black bear runs and the hound dogs roam. I'm a bear hound man.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay three nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.